All right, let's get started here. Welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for attending this session. It's a great day to be a developer, don't you think? Don't you think? Yeah. You know, but it's an interesting thing. You know, as I look back over my entire career and all the development that I've done, you know, I kind of woke up every morning going, you know, it's really a great day to be a developer. You know, now looking at me, that's a lot of years, all right, to wake up thinking it's really a great day to be a developer. But I think it's even a greater day now to be a developer. We have so many devices, so many opportunities, so many things that we can take advantage of now and build really, really, really cool solutions. So it's a great day to be a developer. So welcome. Thank you for coming to this session. I'm Donovan Follett, and I am a technical evangelist. Yes, there is a title in Microsoft as technical evangelist. And I came back from London a while back, and I was going through U.S. Customs. And the guy, you know, the individual looks at me, and he goes, so, and who do you work for? And I go, Microsoft. And he goes, and what do you do? And I go, I don't even want to go there, you know? But I said, well, I'm a technical evangelist. And he goes, really? So anyway, I did get back into the States, so that was a good thing. I'm co-presenting today with Todd Baginski. So Todd.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for coming. Really happy to be here at SharePoint Conference. We've worked really hard on this session. Got a lot of great things to show you. My name is Todd Baginski, as Donovan mentioned. I am a 7-time SharePoint Server MVP, and I've been working with SharePoint for about 10 years now. And I'm the Vice President of Canvas Consulting. And today we've got all kinds of great things to show you, all the way to some really deep dives and a really fantastic demo. So let's take it away.
Yeah, Todd's team has been great in working through this demo. We wanted to try and put together an end-to-end app for SharePoint that really showed the ways that we can tie in so many different technologies now. And you saw, of course, with Scott Gu's presentation this morning, you saw the beginnings of that, and it started to open up. And then I'm sure you've attended the other cloud app model session. So it's just going to continue to unfold in greater and greater ways as you move through the course of this week. So the first part of today, we're just going to take time and we're going to work through this end-to-end demo. And really, it shows this new class of SharePoint solutions that we can build. And with that, I'm going to set a little bit of a context around that. So there are some sessions that you haven't been able to deep dive into. So I want to set a little bit of a context. So we'll talk a little bit about the architecture for this, as well as some of the key enabling technologies that we have used inside of this demo, which you will be building using in your solutions that you develop. And then, as Todd said, then we're going to, after we see the demo and kind of do a level set, then we're going to start breaking down some of those key pieces. Todd's going to dive into some code and show you some things so that you can see how this actually was stitched together. So I really only have one takeaway from this session today, and that is this, that with the new cloud app model for SharePoint and its rich service APIs, your apps can now consume SharePoint better than ever before. Now, what is the cloud app model? The way I like to think about the cloud app model, and you've seen it, and you've been exposed to it a little bit, but what I like to just sum it up as saying, I can use any technology, I can write in any language, I can use standard web technologies across the board, I can host my application on any platform, and SharePoint has given me these great APIs and technologies that I can come back into SharePoint with and build really wonderful solutions. Now, how much better does that get? How much broader does that get? How much more opportunity does that give you to use the skills and abilities that you already have in the platforms and languages and where you're already hosted and languages you're already writing in? How much more of an ability does that give you to write really compelling new class of applications? So that's the key takeaway from today. Now, just to set a little bit of a context for the scenario that this app is used in, there's a business context, and that is just simply that we wanted to build a lead tracking system for our wonderful company called none other than Contoso Compressors. So Contoso Compressors is a company. They're moving forward with their technologies. They want a mobile platform, and they want SharePoint to be opened up to mobile devices. And they want to be able to track sales leads all the way from the request coming in from the public site on Office 365 all the way through the back end when the bid is accepted, and they can go to work and build out the project. So that's kind of the scenario. This is a 100% cloud-based scenario. We are live on Office 365. We are live on Windows Azure. And as long as we have internet connectivity, we will remain alive. All right. Are we okay? All right, so just to kind of give a little bit of a level set and give us a background of our framework for the architecture that we're using, you can look over on the far left-hand side of the screen, and that's where our client is. So we have a Windows 8 client. The Windows 8 client is going to be accessing our back-end services. We also have a Word app. We have Excel, an Excel document that serves up, information living under Excel services. That's the client side, and we'll see some really interesting things there pop as we interact with the client. But then, if you look over on the cloud side, there's really two parts to the cloud side. There is that middle part there, and that's our Office 365 environment. So out on Office 365, we have a standard public-facing website for Office 365. It has some nice CSS branding and branding done to it for Contoso Compressors, and that's where our customers come. We also have the internal site for Office 365, and of course that's SharePoint as we know it, SharePoint as we know and love, all the things that we want to be able to do inside of SharePoint as the internal user. So that's our internal site. On the far right-hand side, your right, my left, on the far right-hand side, you see the backplane of all of the pieces and the components of Windows Azure that we are using. We have Windows Azure websites. That's where we have two MVC4 web applications that are running as apps for SharePoint, one on the public site, one on the internal site. We have Windows Azure Workflow. So this is the new workflow services. Tomorrow there's going to be, and on beyond, there's some great sessions on workflow. And I would ask you to just, you know, look those up, attend those. But we have Windows Azure Workflow as a part of this solution as well. We also have OAuth in the middle of this, and that's Windows Azure Access Control Services. And then we have Windows Azure SQL Database that sits behind this. So I wanted to just kind of give you that framework. So as you're starting to see this demo, as we bounce through this demo, we'll try and call out some of those specific places where those different technologies are being emphasized or used, and then we will do the deep dive in just a little bit. All right, with that, let's go ahead and we'll start our demo. Now, our demo starts out with a customer that happens to be out in the warehouse, and they recognize that something is broken down out in the warehouse, and that's where Todd picks up our demo.
All right, so we're starting out here. You may notice this is an iPad here on the screen. We just like to show off the fact that you can have an Office 365 site and browse to it without any problems right on your iPad. So as I start the demo scenario, I'm walking through with my iPad, and you know, I'm here at Fabricam, of course, right? And I'm walking through my warehouse, and I realize that I need to get a couple new compressors and some service from Contoso. So I'm going to reach out to Contoso and contact them to make a request for quote. So I'm going to go to the request for quote page here. And as Donovan mentioned before, we're going to break these all down and tell you exactly what technologies were used to implement them, show you some code, help you understand the patterns. So I'm going to stay out of the code for right now. So I'm going to come to the request for quote page here, and I'm going to come in and compressor replacement project, And my company is good old Fabricam. I still haven't seen them listed on the NASDAQ yet, but I'm waiting for that any day now.
Come on.
We need some new stuff. There we go. And I will tell them our contact person is, let's go with good old Dan Jump and put in his email there. Okay, and then you can see here we have a little bit of goodness. Works good in the iPad too. We're using the jQuery mobile UI here to give us a nice drop-down box to make that easier to select a date picker. And then finally in our industry, what does Fabricam do? Oh, they're in the fabrication industry. So we're going to hop over, before I click submit here, over to the Windows 8 desktop on Donovan's machine so you can see what happens when I submit this request for quote. So I just clicked the submit button there, and what's happening now is we made a call into the Azure MVC 4 site that we deployed this particular SharePoint piece to. It made an update in the SQL Azure database and stored this request for quote. Has it shown up yet?
Yep.
It already showed up, and we have a notification we sent through the Windows notification services to land on the Windows 8 machine and let Donovan know, who's now going to pick up the demo from the point of view of our salesperson, that they have a new request for quote that they need to go investigate and do some work to help win that sale.
Okay, so the intent is that we are able to just see this lead track through the system as it goes through our internal processes. So at this point, I've been notified that, hey, it's time to create a new project for this, create an estimate for this. So here you can see I have in the middle of the screen my demo app that is just rotating through some pieces of information. Now in this case, it pops in the tile for the last item that was received or the last toast that had been updated. But you also see that there are some KPIs showing, and that's yearly values, yearly revenue, as well as quarterly revenue. Those values are actually being pulled off of an Excel spreadsheet using the REST APIs anytime a bid is actually accepted into a system. Once the bid is accepted into the system, the Excel spreadsheet is updated, and we push new information out to the tile on the desktop for everybody. So in this case, I'll go ahead and open up the app here. So here we have the application now, and this application lets us see all the different leads that are coming in from the different companies. We have Litware here, and this is actually pulling data out of the SQL database at this point in time. You can see we have a bid accepted. Here's a new bid. I can drill into Litware, and when I drill down into Litware, I'm actually making calls back out into under Excel services to pull the charts for Litware. When I'm at the upper level here, I am pulling charts via the REST APIs out of Excel services, but I'm pulling charts that are the aggregated charts. Now, the good thing about this is from my Windows 8 app, I can click on my charts and I can drill directly into that Excel spreadsheet where I can actually see the charts as well as the data that sits behind the year-to-date and the quarterly value. So we're integrated that way. Let's go ahead and come back here to the Windows 8 application. Here's Fabricam, and we have a new compressor replacement that was just entered. So I'm going to go ahead and click into that. It's a new item. It wants me to create an estimate. Notice there's no revenue at this point in time showing. There's no revenue showing, but I can go ahead and now create an estimate. So with the estimate, I'll click on and just go keep this really simple here so my typing doesn't get in the way of things.
And while Donovan points that out, I'd like to point out that I started out on the public Office 365 site that's available to anonymous users to submit that RFQ form. When we pulled the data through the Windows 8 application, we were pulling from an internal Office 365 site, which is only able to be accessed by people at Contoso who have an account to get to it. So it's not like our data from that related to our sales metrics and the other things here were available to the public. It's coming from an internal site instead when the Windows 8 app interacts with it.
Yep.
You got the form all filled out now?
Yep, form is filled out. Now this is where the magic starts to happen. Lots of things kind of kick into gear. This is where our workflow kicks into gear when I click save. You'll notice the first thing that happens when I click save is in just a couple seconds here, I'm going to get a tile or a toast that says, and there it is, it says the SOW has been created for compressor replacement project for the company. So again, as the lead is moving through the system, as different things happen to the lead, we send the tiles or the toast messages on out to the Windows 8 app. Now, some other very significant things happened here. First of all, the SQL Azure database was updated. The status was changed because now we have an estimate that's been created. But the second thing and primary thing that happened was that a workflow was kicked off inside of SharePoint. And this is a Windows Azure workflow, the new workflow that's with SharePoint for this version. And when that workflow kicked off, it did a couple things. One, it generated that statement of work. Now, how did it do that? Well, the workflow called a service, called an endpoint out in our Windows Azure MVC4 app and said, hey, generate an SOW. So the MVC4 app, using the new app principle and OAuth, reached back into SharePoint on its own volition, reached back into SharePoint, into a document library, grabbed the template out, pulled it into its working context, reached out to the SQL Azure database, grabbed the data for that lead, auto-generated using the OpenXML SDK, auto-generated the statement of work, and pushed it back into SharePoint. So all of that was done on our behalf. And then we sent the WNS message out through to give the tile out to Windows 8. So all of that took place in just a matter of seconds there for us. Again, the services in the middle tier handled all of that for us by calling into it. All right. So with that, we also sent an email then out to Alan Brewer. And Alan Brewer is our sales manager because now he has to go in and approve the SOW, and so we've sent him a task work item. Let me go ahead and close out of that. Todd, do you have it? Is the email received yet?
It just showed up 2 seconds ago.
All right.
I was clicking, clicking, clicking. Please show up. Please show up. There you go. Sometimes it takes a little
paranoid
longer
or anything,
than
okay.
others. One thing we found is when we send the emails programmatically, sometimes they show up like that. Other times they take a minute or two. So back onto the iPad here. And here you can see Alan's OA through his Office 365 account. So I've signed in with Alan Brewer. He's the sales manager. It's Alan's job to approve this SOW and make it so that, you know, once it's approved, then it's going to be sent to the client. So here you can see it inside of our machine on the iPad. I'm going to pop over here because I'd like to demonstrate another.
And that just shows the great work that the SharePoint team has done in making sure that SharePoint renders nicely and beautifully on so many different devices now.
So let's hop over to Outlook here on my laptop, NIE, and take a look at the email here. There we go. So here's the compressor replacement project we had before. And now I can come to the bottom of the page, and I can take a look at this particular task that's been assigned to me by the Windows Azure workflow. Inside of this Windows Azure workflow, we're going to have a link to open up the document that was just generated automatically by our workflow and the other things running inside of our Windows Azure MVC Foresight. So here is my SOW for the compressor replacement project, and I'm going to go ahead and open this one up. And this is going to open up. As you can see, I haven't updated RTM yet. I've got the Word 2013 preview on my machine still here. But here is my Word document that was generated, you'll notice up here in the header section that all of the information I just typed in, including my misspelling of the word replacement here, has been pulled out of that SQL Azure database and injected into the document template we retrieved from the SharePoint internal site on Office 365. So I put this into edit mode here. One of the other things we can show you is the task pane app for Office we have created. This task pane app for Office also calls back into the internal 365 SharePoint site and pulls out, using the REST APIs with Excel services, the charts and graphs that we see here too. So we're leveraging the same endpoint we made to retrieve these charts and graphs from SharePoint and our MVC4 site, and pulling them right in here inside of our Word document. So now, as Alan, I can look at this and say, okay, yeah, this SOW looks good. Let's check out what the details are on here. Oh, it's worth $7,000. Do we do a lot of business with Fabricam? Excellent, looking good to me. I'm gonna go ahead and proceed to approve this guy now. So to do that, let's go back and open up the task. Did I click on the task or did I click on the document?
The bottom.
Got it. There we go. So I'm going to pop this guy into edit mode now. And then now what I can do, I clicked the wrong one, didn't I?
No, you got to approve. Go ahead and approve it.
Edit item. Oh, yeah. I'm looking in the wrong spot. So now I can approve this workflow and this document and do that just like I would through regular SharePoint, right? I mean, everything looks the same. We're running online here, and we have a lot of things and cloud components going on. But really, your end user experience, as you can see, is the same as it was in prior versions of SharePoint as well.
Okay, now
back to the Windows 8 app.
Just as soon as Todd did that, okay, so now again, we're tracking the status through on the Windows 8 app. So we received a tile as soon as that bid was accepted there, or was updated, we received a tile or a toast that said, hey, your work has moved forward. Okay? So let's go back to Todd. Which one?
There we go. So now at this point, what we're going to do is we're just going to pretend that, you know, we know that email went out and it got sent to the client and the SOW is created and approved. And the client got back to us from Fabricam. And they said, we like your estimate. Looks good, 7,000 bucks. That'll do the job for us. Let's go ahead and kick this project off and make it happen.
Wrong site
there. There it is. All right. So what's going to happen now is Alan's going to go back to the intranet for Contoso, which is running here, as you can see, on the Office 365 site. Looks a little bit different than what we had for the public site for Contoso compressors. A couple things to point out. The first thing that we have here I'd like to show you is the SOW's document library. If we come down in there, here you will see the document that we just generated for the compressor overhaul and replacement projects. You can see just 8 minutes ago on the second one there, that was the document. It's now stored in the SharePoint document library. The other thing that we have here, when we go back to the site, is we have an external list. This external list pulls the data from the SQL Azure database that tracks our sales leads. And so if I go down to the bottom of the page here, I can see my compressor replacement project, and I'm going to put this guy into edit mode. There you go. I couldn't spot it. It was hiding from me up top there. Okay, so we'll edit this guy. And now, so Alan's going to say, all right, they called me back, said that they accepted that. Let's get going on it. So he's going to mark this as bid accepted and hit save. Oh, pardon me. That's jumping over to HTTPS. So I didn't start on HTTPS. So we'll jump back over there and save it. And so now he is marking the bid as being accepted. And when he does that, there's a few other things that are going to follow up at the end of this workflow as well. If we pop back to this one, number two. We missed it. The notification showed up at that point on the Windows 8 app, and it let us know that the bid has been accepted and that the workflow is now proceeding to create a new team site in the Contoso intranet so that we can collaborate on that project and do whatever we need to do to make it happen for Fabricam. So one other thing that you'll notice is Donovan's back in the Windows 8 app is when he comes in and clicks on the particular lead that we have, you can see that we now have updated that data there on what our revenue looks like that came from the SQL Azure database. And the other thing that we did behind the scenes is we went back into the Excel sheet that Donovan showed earlier where we're tracking all of the different sales that we have, and we edited that to add the $7,000 in this case to the appropriate cell that's tracking revenue for this quarter for that particular company. And so we're updating our business analytics at the same time and returning back to our Windows 8 application, whether we're looking at the charts and graphs in Excel services or in the Windows 8 app or on the Toast and Tiles that show up on Windows 8 machine, they are all updated in real time with the new sales metrics related to this lead. Okay, so now we're going to bounce back over to my laptop and take a look at the Contoso Compressor SharePoint site. So as we jump back here, I'm going to go to this projects link. This projects link takes me to a subsite called projects, underneath which we create all the different project sites for the different leads that we win through this particular demo. So if I jump into the site contents page here now, and then we scroll down to the bottom. Looks like that one has not yet been created. Sometimes these take a minute or two to show up for when they are created there. That process seems to take a little bit longer in O365 than it does if you're running in an on-premise environment. I'll keep refreshing it here throughout the presentation, though, and it definitely makes a subsite. And now you've gone front to back from someone coming in on the internet site, submitting a lead, tracking it, processing it, estimating it, creating a document automatically, submitting it for approval, getting approval, marketing it as such, and now here at the very end, you've even got a team site ready to track that entire project. Hasn't shown up just yet. We'll keep trying it in a minute here.
Well, why don't you just pop into one of the other ones there, creates a team site for all of the individuals that are going to be associated with this project to be able to store and save their documents, puts the title for the project that was created all the way back from the request for quote into the top of the team site. Okay.
So does anybody want to see how that was built?
Yes.
All right.
Next steps, very good.
So we're going to break it down now and walk through it piece by piece and show you all the different components, teach you the architectural patterns behind them, and help you understand how we built it so you can go forward and build things like this on your own as well.
All right. So this morning you saw in the keynote, you saw some of the things that Scott Guthrie called out about the architectural approaches. And one of the architectural approaches is the SharePoint hosted app. That means all of the artifacts that you are building for that app for SharePoint are going to live inside of SharePoint. So that's a SharePoint hosted app. There's other sessions that dig deep into each of these concepts. For the cloud-based app side, and these are apps that are off SharePoint. So the application, the web application that you build is going to be hosted off of SharePoint. Our app is a provider-hosted app, which simply means that our code is running off of SharePoint. We have chosen to run that code in Windows Azure, but it does not have to be run there. Again, it can be written in any language. It can use any web technologies. It can be hosted on any platform as long as you're using the rich, deep set of SharePoint APIs to be able to come back in, and they are OAuth-enabled. So we are... Our backplane then is a provider-hosted app, both for the public site as well as for the internal site. There's also the auto-hosted app that Scott talked about this morning. We did not use that pattern, but this app could have been built in that pattern as well. Okay, the other thing, let's just do some leveling technologies here as to what are those key pieces of new SharePoint goodness that can help us to be able to come back into our SharePoint site and be able to use all of the things that SharePoint makes available to us. One of those enabling technologies is the new underscore API. This is the API that is all and end all for SharePoint. This is the API that is OAuth enabled, so it understands how to do that OAuth relationship with access control, which is the authorization server. It knows that. And there's hundreds, let me just change it. There's thousands of classes, there's thousands of members to this. The API set that we had in 2010, we had SharePoint Foundation, we had some things that we could go back in and do from the client-side object model perspective. Those APIs have been so broadly enabled now. Now you can come into user profiles. You can actually drive search. Everything that you see in SharePoint's UI that's a reflection of search and what search can do, that's driven by the underscore API for search. That's all REST-based. You have that at your fingertips, too, as developers. Taxonomy, you can work with that with the REST APIs. Did I say user profiles? User profiles, too, and much, much, much more. There's great documentation about the underscore API that's available to you, both for REST as well as for the client-side object models for .NET and for JavaScript as well as for Silverlight and mobile. So powerful API, and that's what we use in our application to be able to come back into SharePoint. Another key enabling technology is this notion of the app principle. Okay? So we all are very familiar with user principles in SharePoint, but now there is this notion of an app principle. Just like users can have permissions set on them to do things in SharePoint, now we have an app principle that can have permissions set on it so that it can do things in SharePoint. Now that's really, really powerful because we couldn't do that in the sandbox, but now with the cloud-based or the cloud app model and with OAuth, we can have this app principle be able to do things. We'll talk a little bit more about it in a minute, how that happens. But how do you create an app principle? Well, if you're testing, you go into the appreg.new.aspx page. It's in the layouts WAC15 directory. And you load up this page, and you create a client ID, and you create an app secret. You give it a title. And essentially, then, you register your app domain where your app is running from, as well as the redirect API, the redirect location, so that access control services can bounce you back and authenticate to be able to authenticate the app principle and then bounce you back to your web page and onto SharePoint.
Now, check out the bottom text box in the screenshot there. What's that file extension there? Is that .NET code? No, it's PHP. That's the beauty of this approach. You could do this in PHP as well. You can write your code for presentation layer and, you know, handling actions and things that the users do in it in a PHP app, call back into these same RESTful APIs that SharePoint has, use the app principle to give that PHP app the permissions it needs to do what it needs to do in SharePoint, and write your app that way as well.
And we do that then with the app principle in conjunction with OAuth. So OAuth gives us the ability now for the app itself to also be authenticated and be trusted within SharePoint. Now, let me just back that off. That's got a slide build error there. No, that's exactly right. Sorry about that. Okay, so once we have the app principle registered with Access Control Services, then Access Control Services understands that app principle. Now, when you go to deploy your app for SharePoint into the SharePoint environment, Then you are going to get prompted at the beginning of that install, and it's going to ask you, do you want to trust this app in SharePoint? And the app is going to present a number of things that it is going to want to be able to do and the permissions that it needs to do that. Now, you as, well, let me just rephrase that. IT professionals can have the opportunity to choose how they want to allow apps into SharePoint on premises as well as SharePoint online. So they can completely lock this down so users cannot do apps on their own and leave that only to IT professionals to do or the administrators to do. All of that is good. That's just all good. There's absolute control for IT on this. But the point is that the person that clicks trusted needs to have all the permissions that that app is going to ask for, or it's nothing. It does not get installed. So if an app is asking permissions to do something in the SharePoint site, the person who is going to trust it must have the permissions, all the permissions that that app is going to have. Okay?
One thing to point out about that slide, too, this is not the same screen we saw when we installed our provider app, our provider-hosted app. It's an example with many more permissions and things that it's asking for permission to help illustrate that there's all kinds of different permissions that you can ask for in a SharePoint site and then grant that app the rights to do. So if you're trying to map these things you see on the slide in your head toward what we had in the demo, it doesn't match up there.
Good point, Todd. Thanks. Okay, so now the app principal needs to be able to authenticate. Okay, your app is going to be accessed. Somebody hits a web page that's outside of your app, that's outside of SharePoint, hits your web page. That web page, which is your app, is going to be rendered inside of SharePoint. It may need permissions to do something. So how does that authentication take place? And Rob Howard is going to deep dive into this week, so don't miss his session. If you want to understand this to the best it can be explained, go to Rob Howard's session. But just for a high level, because we use this in our demo, and so you can see code related to that, when somebody accesses something in SharePoint, we check, first of all, are there user credentials? Do they have a username and password? If so, and we only have a user context, then hey, no problem. You have access. That's something we've always done in SharePoint. But now with the notion of the app principal and OAuth and the capability to have OAuth as a part of the authentication process, maybe we don't have a user credential provided. Maybe we just have received an app token, okay, an app context and an app token. So if we haven't received user credentials, we check then to see, has there been an app token provided? If not, then it's just anonymous context. Let the person access SharePoint, and there's reasons to be able to do that. If, perchance, there is an app token provided, then we ask another question. Does the app token include the user? Okay, so we have an app token. That means OAuth is a part of this mix. The question is, do we have a user? If we have a user context also, then it is an app plus user context, and now we can let that individual or let that flow through, and that's the authenticated context. Now the question is, what permissions win? Well, it's the intersection between the user's permissions and the app permissions that will flow through that context. So if the user can do it and the app can't, then that can't be done. If the app can do it and the user can't, then that can't be done. So those permissions, the permissions that flow into that SharePoint context are the permissions at the intersection of the two. Now there are times, and this is what we use quite extensively within our demo, is that you can have an app token that does not include the user. And this is where the app principal itself can authenticate, okay, can authenticate out to access control services, and that token can be passed all the way into SharePoint, and because trusted was pressed at the time that app was installed, That app can now come in on its own permission, set of permissions, and do things. And so there may be times when you want to have an app, let's say in an expense submission kind of scenario, where you want to have the app be able to automatically approve some things that the user can't approve, so you simply authenticate against against OAuth with the app's ID. So all of that is a scenario. There's a lot more to be able to discuss about that. Again, Rob Howard's session. So with that as the background and the context now, let's go ahead and start drilling into how this baby was built.
Okay, we're going to start pretty much mirror these in the order you saw them in the demo so that they are easier to explain. You help conceptualize things along the way. We're going to start out on the public Office 365 site. This is where I originally went to submit that request for quote. Again, this was a provider-hosted app we built for SharePoint that we packaged and deployed this solution with. Inside of our provider-hosted app, what we created is an MVC4 web application that we're deploying out to Windows Azure. So inside of that MVC4 app is going to be all the endpoints we created to interact with SQL Azure, to interact with workflow, to query back into SharePoint, to fire off notifications, to create documents, to do all those different things you saw. We're running that code inside the context of the MVC4 site. But for the public site, the only piece of all that we're doing is merely making the entry into the SQL database to say we have a new sales lead that came in from the RFQ form. Now, you saw that we had the Chrome wrapped around, like you saw in the keynote this morning when Scott showed you how to put the Chrome around a SharePoint app and show you the top piece. I'm going to dive into that a little bit more in depth and show you how that's done. And then this particular request for quote form, as I pointed out, calls an OData endpoint we made in the Azure MVC4 site, which in turn uses the Entity Framework to talk to the SQL Server. So what we're going to do now is hop over and take a look at some of this code to see how that was done. I'm going to start off here and go to my project in Visual Studio that defines this one. Here you can see in the Solution Explorer, I have three different projects. The top project right here is my SharePoint project. This is the piece that deploys the app manifest file Scott talked about in the keynote this morning, and I'm sure you'll see it discussed in much more depth this week. This is basically the file and the metadata that tells SharePoint, hey, I'm installing an app, here's all the information you need to know about it. That's really all we're deploying with this one. There are no other SharePoint components in the public site. In addition to that piece, we also have two projects with the exact same name. This is the one that we ran live against. This is our MVC4 site that holds all of the different components that support the public website that we have here. You'll notice we also have the project, as I mentioned, with the exact same name, and this one was packaged as a web role. We originally built this as a web role and deployed it to Azure, and then later we pulled it back out of a web role and made it an MVC4 app instead. The point is you can take a web role or an MVC4 app, deploy it as part of a provider-hosted app, and integrate that with SharePoint. Now, if we start digging down into these a little bit here, here you can see this is the app manifest file, and in our scenario, we've granted full control to the site collection. Now, we could go back through this later and just take these different permission scopes here to say this just has permission to do something with a list in SharePoint and then assign it the appropriate permission. That's where you set your permissions for your provider-hosted app. The next piece of the puzzle is the MVC4 web app that we talked about. That really is where our code runs. The index.aspx file right here, this is the actual file that gets served up when you go to the request for quote form. So the first thing I'd like to show you is how we put the Chrome around that and made the menu so it fit in and looked like it was branded and running on the SharePoint server. I'd like to bring your attention to the top here in this section where we have a bunch of different references that we're making to different files that support the site. You can see we have a couple there that we use CSS for. In particular, I mentioned before the jQuery UI. That's how we made that little calendar control. The same kind of things you're used to in web development hold true here for this particular sample. We're taking advantage of the jQuery scripts, and then we're also including the Microsoft Ajax.js file. If you don't include that last one there, your Chrome control will not work. You have to have that one in there. If you leave it out, you will get type as undefined when the JavaScript tries to register different SharePoint namespaces. So how does the Chrome control really work? Well, Scott sure made it look this easy this morning by typing SP something, hit tab, and all of a sudden you had a Chrome control on the screen. So I'm going to let you know what's actually going on when you do that. So the first thing that we're going to do is we are going to set the URL for the host website that this SharePoint app is deployed to. You can discover this dynamically based on the query string as well. We knew it would only be in one spot on this server for this demo, so we just have it hard-coded here, but it can be dynamic. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to assemble a little variable here that takes that URL, taxon underscore layouts 15, and then we're going to call get script against that path and this little JavaScript file. SPUI controls JS is what is responsible for chroming the top of your SharePoint site. When we call the get script method and tell it the path of this script that came from our host SharePoint server, we also register this callback function right there. So this basically means go get this JS file from the SharePoint site. After you have the JS file loaded in the browser and I can call into it, then fire render Chrome control. Inside of render Chrome control, you can see it right here, we've set an option here. This is an array that you will pass in as you construct your new Chrome control, and you can set different things by defining different menu items and whatnot at the top of the Chrome control. In this case, we've chose just to put in the title here, and you saw that when we requested, we went to the RFQ form, and that was at the top of the page there, the title of the page. To actually make the Chrome control, then what you do is you make a new instance of the SPUI controls navigation with JavaScript, and what you're going to pass in right here is going to be the ID of a div where you wish to inject this Chrome onto your SharePoint site. We also pass in options here, which put in the particular title there, and then we set it to set visible, and it appears. If we go down further in the page and look at our HTML, here is my div at the very top of the body of my document, and that's how I got the Chrome to appear at the top. So that's all you have to do to reach back into SharePoint is retrieve a JavaScript file, call a function in JavaScript, and point it at a div that you've set the ID for, and bang, you've got the Chrome inside of SharePoint there. That's pretty nice, isn't it? The next thing to talk about related to our provider-hosted app here for the submit an RFQ page is how did we get the data into SQL Azure? We are using Ajax through jQuery here, and we are hitting this endpoint that we created in our MVC foresight. This endpoint actually is going to use the entity framework to access our SQL server and Windows Azure SQL database and commit the new value there. Not really a lot of SharePoint-specific code to dig into that one, so I'm not going to get into how we did the data beyond this pattern right here. All right. So that was a really simple piece. Now there's a lot more moving parts here and more things to consider. Let's start off first with how do we get the push notifications to work? We use what's called Windows Push Notification Services, or WNS for short. And what are these? Well, really, it's a cloud-hosted service that Microsoft provides you free of charge. And you can use it with your applications to send different notifications to different devices. These notifications, as you saw in the demo, we had the what's called the toast notification. That's the one that you see on the left side of the screen. It pops up in the top right of your Windows 8 application. And then we had the tile notifications as well. Tile notifications are when you drag or when you install a Windows 8 application, it puts a tile for that app on your start screen in Windows 8. And so what we were able to do with the tile notifications is cycle through the different notifications we pushed to the tile for our Windows 8 app. And as you can see in the screenshots and you saw in the demo, the data can be dynamic. You can include graphics with it as well. So how do these work? And these are the main components of how you fire push notifications and how we integrated it with our particular example in SharePoint. You'll notice on the left side, that white bubble represents the Windows 8 OS and the machine that was running here on Donovan's laptop. In the middle, we have the different pieces running in the cloud, which include the Windows Azure web applications that we deployed as part of our provider-hosted app, as well as the Windows Push Notification Service itself. On the right side, we have our different SharePoint sites, and we called in to and sent these notifications from multiple different places throughout the demo. The first place we sent them was from the public site. After we created the estimate, after we created the request for quote and put that into our SQL Azure database, we triggered a notification from the public site to go into our Windows Azure web app, hit our RESTful endpoint that we made to send the notification, which in turn sends it through the WNS service and then lands it back on your Windows 8 machine. Now, we sent notifications also from the Windows 8 app. To send them from the Windows 8 app, it happened when we created the estimate. I'll show you the code here in a second, but basically we said, okay, we created an estimate. Let's put the data in the SQL Azure database. After we've got that done and we know that happened, let's trigger a notification to let everybody know that the estimate had been created. So we came in from that angle as well. The third angle we came in from was from our internal site. On the internal site, you'll remember we went through and we approved the item as part of the workflow. And when the workflow saw that the item was approved, it then triggered a notification to tell everybody that the item had been approved and sent to the client. So as you can see, when you're working with WNS, you can come at it from many different angles here. We chose to put the Azure web application in the middle so we'd have a single entry point no matter where we were firing our notifications from. You can trigger notifications from all kinds of different places, as I mentioned. You can even put them in an event receiver on a SharePoint list. So someone could change an item in a SharePoint list. You could look at what they changed, and if it was important to fire a notification, you could do that as well. You can put them in a remote event receivers or external event receivers, which are new to SharePoint 2013 as well. And then you could also even have a timer job or a worker role that was pulling something, and when it saw something changed, it could fire a notification too. Finally, you could take a custom code approach to implement it wherever and however you like, which is exactly what we did here in the demo. Let's jump over here real quick and take a look at some of the code related to notifications. Now we're going to move to a different solution here. And in this particular solution, this is our internal site. So we deployed it in two different spots for good reasons. We deployed things to the external or public Office 365 site because those are components and code that we wanted anonymous users to be able to access. Then we had our whole suite of components that ran from that intranet point of view, where we had our internal Office 365 site working with the employees inside of Contoso to do things. So that's what this particular solution supports. The top one here is our SharePoint solution that deploys the pieces to SharePoint. The bottom one here is the solution that deploys the provider-hosted pieces out to our Windows Azure MVC4 site again. The middle one, just like I said before, it's the same thing as the bottom one. We originally did it as part of a web role, and then we changed it to be an MVC4 site instead. So let's dig into these a little bit and see how this was actually done. This particular class that I'm working with right here is part of my site running on Azure, that my MVC4 site. The SPO util class, you can see up here in the top, this guy's job is basically to hold all of the functionality and the methods that we use to interact with SharePoint Online from our MVC4 site in Azure. So every time we're punching into SharePoint, we're coming through this particular class. We're also using this class to fire off notifications and do other things like that as well. you'll notice this method we created here, notify after creating SOW. So this is what fired off after the SOW was created inside of the Azure MVC Foresight, and it tells people that the SOW has been created and uploaded to the SharePoint site. How did that work? Well, it called into this WNS util class that we created. This class's job is to basically package up all the different types of notifications and the information that goes along with each, and whether they're tile or toast notifications, and call into the WNS service to actually send them. So we called into send notification template 2 from the code I just showed you when we created the SOW. That one looks like this. This was a simple toast notification, as you can see right here. And the XML that you assemble, as you can see inside of here, there you go. An SOW has been created for the placeholder, project for company placeholder. So you can dynamically replace these things, as you can see we're doing right here, with project name and company name. And that's all you have to do to actually create the notification. We have other notifications in here as well. Some are a little bit more complex. For example, we created this one called Send Notification Template 1. This one packaged up multiple toast and tile notifications in a single method call and then sent them out through the WNS service. You can learn all about this and get a ton of samples for this stuff on the MSDN. There's a lot of documentation. It makes it very easy to work with notifications and program them yourself. There were a couple other places that we called in the notifications as well, from the Windows 8 app. Believe it or not, that's Windows 8 app code. You're saying, what? That's JavaScript. Well, that's how we wrote this one. You can write Windows 8 apps in JavaScript or in what's called WinRT, which is a managed code language. In this example, we use JavaScript. We'll get into that a little bit more. But to show you the thing about the notification, essentially, put SharePoint data function fires when you click the button to submit the estimate from the Windows 8 app. What it does is first it calls out and it will go to this URL I've just highlighted, which is the one on our ASP.NET MVC Foresight, which goes and commits the data to the SQL Azure database. We register a callback function when it's completed and we get that information back. And then here we call out to send notification template 2. So as you can see, it's a very component-oriented type of design where we've packaged notifications into one spot. We've made endpoints for them in our MVC Foresight, so we merely call a URL and bang, our notifications get sent. So that's how it happened from Windows 8. Well, what about the workflow? The workflow did it too. The easiest way to show you the workflow did it is just by viewing source on the workflow, actually, instead of looking at it in designer mode. Here you can see in Visual Studio, on this particular line of code, the workflow is going to call and send notification template 3, and it's going to pass in the project ID and the company name and all that other information to make that notification dynamic when it lands on the client. So here it is being called from a workflow running on Azure Workflow Server as well. To create one of these, you just go into your workflow and you add in a workflow activity that calls a service somewhere else, and you specify the endpoint URL as well as the parameters you want to give it, and it assembles all this XML under the hood for you. You can't really see the URL from the designer. That's why I'm showing you the XML here related to notifications and the workflow. So let's talk about the things we did in the Windows 8 app and how we got data from SharePoint there. The first thing you saw, which I just covered, is we had the toast, tile, and raw notifications showing up to tell people what was happening related to the different estimates and leads. The second thing that you saw is we were pulling in data from Excel services as well and displaying the charts and graphs. And there's all kinds of different things you can do with the Windows 8 app. As Donovan mentioned, you've got that new underscore API endpoint. You can call into that and from Windows 8 very easily and pull data from SharePoint, use that app principle we were talking about to authenticate yourself to make those calls and to retrieve information or to interact with SharePoint or invoke things. Those APIs, very important not to leave this conference without understanding it. They're not just reading data. You can make subsites. You can grant users permissions. You can edit items. You know, all kinds of things in SharePoint that endpoint covers for you. The Win8 APIs that you can use, you can either call in from the Windows runtime or the WinRT library if you create your Windows 8 app with the WinRT code behind it, or you can use what's called the WinJS or the Windows library for JavaScript. That's what we used in this particular example. As I mentioned before, all the SharePoint APIs are fair game calling in. The third one in the list here, the WAPIFrame ASPX, this is actually a file you can call into now in SharePoint to render a document that is part of the Office web application. So we were calling into that as well when we generated the hyperlinks associated with the charts and graphs you see on the screen here. So when we clicked on one of the charts and graphs, we call into the WAPIFrame bit, which automatically will render it in the web browser for us, and we don't have to click our way into SharePoint to find it. Finally, you can integrate with Windows Azure however you want. You decide how you want to do it. You saw how we wrapped up the notifications into RESTful endpoints in Azure and called there from everywhere. You might have other services in your organization that make sense to put into an endpoint in Azure and then call it from Windows 8 or SharePoint or a provider-hosted app. Really, the sky's the limit on how you want to go about doing that. So when we authenticate to SharePoint, if we're not going through OData, how do we do that? If we're not going through OAuth and using the app principle to get at something inside of SharePoint, how would we go about making that happen from Windows 8? Well, here's the pattern you'll follow. As you can see on the slide here, it's a six-step process. Basically, you're going to go out to the Microsoft Online STS, and you're going to ask for a security token. You're going to receive the token back, and then you're going to send that token back to SharePoint after you get the security token, which is in turn going to exchange an access token for you. This is much like the OAuth pattern, which is the different technology. At that point, though, you will receive cookies back. They're called the FedAuth and RTFA cookies. These cookies inside of your machine and on your browser will hold the information you need to attach to subsequent requests and authenticate yourself to SharePoint. I want to show you in our Windows 8 app here a couple of the pieces of the puzzle related to the Excel services and how we got the data inside of there. This is the landing page. This is the one that we were looking at when we first opened our Windows 8 application. It's the one that had the two all-up charts about company sales and then listed different companies and the leads underneath them. Inside of this particular page, the way that we got our data, the way that we made the links to the charts when you click them were here using that WAPIFrame, and then we were pulling in dynamic properties that we had gathered from the SharePoint site on the locations of these different charts and graphs on a per company basis. The other things that you can see are if we go up to the company page, this was our detail for the company as well. Remember, we had the charts and graphs specific to Litware and Fabricam on there and their quarterly and yearly sales. We used the WAPIFrame again here to display those items. If I go back to the landing page here, is not behaving well. There we go. Okay. This is our class, or I call it a class, the JavaScript library that we created and included with our Windows 8 application. We're calling into it from many different pages in our Windows 8 app to facilitate the data interaction with SharePoint. You can see here that this is the put method I talked about before that put in the estimate. But how do we get our initial data load back from SharePoint? If we come to the top, you can see that we're using the Excel REST APIs to pull back the data associated with all the information stored financially. The other thing to point out is that here is a WCF endpoint, a RESTful one that we created inside of our MVC4 application. This is inside of our internal site that we deployed to SharePoint. Inside of here, when I hit this particular endpoint, what it's going to do is use the entity framework, call into the SQL Azure site, and return me all the data associated with the sales leads, so we're pulling it in here as well. You could take this same approach if you weren't pulling your data from SQL Azure, but if you were pulling your data from SharePoint lists instead, then you could use the underscore API with SharePoint to grab the data out of your SharePoint list in that scenario as well. As you can see, as you're looking at all the code, it's all JavaScript. It's all simple, isn't it? It's jQuery, very simple things to write. All you have to know is the format of the endpoint that you're looking at in the REST URL, and you get your data back real easy. You don't have to memorize a million SP whatever objects anymore to figure out what you need to go get data. You just go after the RESTful endpoints to get it nowadays instead. So we're moving on now to the internal site that we had and all the different things inside of it. As you saw on our internal site, we were using it for document storage and collaboration. We stored the SOWs there after we created them. We also stored our template for the SOW in the internal site as well. So the same way that you think about how you can use SharePoint now for document management and templating and workflow and all that, it's the same. It's you're just calling into it from different places to do the same thing. Instead of running your code on the SharePoint server, you're running it on a different server. We used it for business intelligence, which SharePoint is really good for with Excel services. We also created that external content type that allowed us to make that external list and call out to the SQL Azure site. One nice thing about using the external content types with the app approach for SharePoint is if I create an external content type to go get at an external data source, I can scope that external content type so it's only available in the app I deploy it to from SharePoint. That way, people who are doing things in your SharePoint site, not within the context of your SharePoint app, they won't even know about it. So you can tailor your external lists to be specific and used just by your SharePoint apps that you can create. Another thing that you could do here that we had in the demo, we took it out in the interest of time, was just spinning up the new community site template in SharePoint. And the community site is a great place to allow people to interact and ask questions and get them answered and things like that as well. As you can see, the couple more screenshots to come back in here for reference as you look at the decks after the conference help tie what we have on the slides and what we talked about here to a visual representation, help jog your memory about the demo. So to do all this, OAuth made it all possible. It allowed us to create the documents. It allowed us to upload the documents to SharePoint, to update the list items in SharePoint related to the workflow, and to also create our SharePoint team sites at the very end of the day. That was our authentication pattern to get in there. So what does that mean for you as a SharePoint developer? And as Donovan outlined in the OAuth thing before, it means go to Rob Howard's session and figure out OAuth and make sure you understand it, because you're going to be using it everywhere as you build these new apps in SharePoint to communicate back into SharePoint, tell it who you are, and get the permissions to do what you need to do. We also, I'm going to jump back into the code here briefly and talk about a couple of these other pieces here. This is once again back in my class in my Azure MVC4 site. This is the one running on my internal provider-hosted app that does all the things we just talked about on the internal site. You'll notice here, for example, if I open up the create subsite method, I'm finally seeing some code related to authentication. There it is on line 153. The token helper class is included when you create a new project in Visual Studio for a provider-hosted app or an auto-hosted app or a SharePoint-hosted app. This particular class is managed code that you can call into, and it has a bunch of helper methods in it that allow you to facilitate authentication with OAuth. In this scenario, what I'm doing is I'm telling it which SharePoint site I want to authenticate to with the URL you see as the first argument. And the second argument, anybody got a guess on what that internal token equates to that you've seen earlier today? Not yet. What? The app ID, exactly. That's your app principal. That when you go to AppReg New and you create that client ID and the client secret, this is the client ID which we have stored in just another class to allow us to look up to it from multiple places. You pass in the URL, you pass in the ID, you get back the OAuth goodness that SharePoint has to offer. As you can see, moving on from there, now we are using the client-side object model instead of the RESTful approach, which cranks up our new site after that part of the workflow is finished. Okay, so that's a really good example of that OAuth pattern. The next piece of the puzzle is our app for Office. So as you saw, you can do business intelligence with the app for Office, and you can call out from the app for Office and use RESTful APIs and OAuth within that little app to get back to SharePoint. It's the exact same pattern that you would use anywhere else. That's the really nice part about this model now is your authentication pattern, your query pattern, your API interaction pattern is identical whether you're programming it from an app for Office, from a provider-hosted app, SharePoint-hosted app, et cetera. You have different options when you deploy your task pane app for Office. In our scenario, what we did is we deployed it to the SharePoint app catalog. And what this allows us to do is deploy it to our SharePoint tenancy, and then people can access it and activate it in their Office apps from that tenancy. I'm sure that if you go to some of the apps for Office sessions here and with SharePoint, they're going to break that down really deep for you. Finally, we had our Windows Azure Workflow Services bit. So the workflows no longer run on the SharePoint server. They run on the Azure Workflow Server. What's the development experience like for that? Well, it's the same as it used to be, pretty much. You go into Visual Studio, go to your SharePoint project, tell it you want to add a workflow. It brings up the Workflow Designer, which you can see a screenshot of here. From there, you just drag different components into them, order them, edit them in the property page, and you're off and running with your workflow as well. We have a list here of all the different things that our workflow did. The first bullet point's the most important one to remember related to this demo. We used custom actions, and we used out-of-the-box actions here. The custom actions we created were basically the ones where we told it, okay, something happened in the context of my workflow. Please go out to my Azure MVC4 website and send a notification as a result. So that brings us to the end. Anybody really impressed on what you can do with the new version of SharePoint and the app model? Yeah, we were too. It's really sky's the limit on what you can program up with this.
Yeah, absolutely. This was really, really fun to be able to put this together and to just kind of give that sense of there's a whole new future here for us, a whole new class of applications that we can now start to build with the new cloud app model for Office as well as for SharePoint. Mm-hmm. So go forward, have fun with it. There's a number of things if you want to get started. The most important thing is dev.office.com. That has all the resources for you with respect to apps for Office and SharePoint. We also have other sessions. Make sure you visit other sessions at will. And please submit an eval if you would. We appreciate that. But most of all, have a very, very good, wonderful conference. And thank you very much.
Thanks for coming.